Hello, everybody. Welcome to On the Bima, where we chat with Jewish theater makers from around the world about their art, Judaism, and vision for theater's future. I'm your host, Danielle Levski. This podcast is brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater, a nonprofit organization made up of artists, theaters, and other people connected to theater to promote the creation, presentation, and preservation of both traditional and non-traditional theatrical endeavors by, for, and about the Jewish experience. Today, we're calling to the Bima two special guests, author, poet, Persian, Jewish mother, and empowered woman, Dorit Nauparvar, and speaker, advocate, writer, actor, and community engagement director at Jimena, Matthew Noriel, aka the Empress Mizrahi, who are both based in Los Angeles, California. It's such an honor to have you as guests on our show, Dorit and Matthew.
A pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Danielle.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to start by talking about a project you all have coming up that has been in the making for a long time, the Dragonfly, which in June 2021, the Braid staged as part of their Persian Sunrise American Sunset event, focusing on Persian stories and perspectives. And now you're going to be presenting it once more for the Braid in their Out Loud series, which features queer stories and perspectives. I know that the Dragonfly is part of Matthew's story and is featured in your upcoming book, Empower Me Today, Dorit. But I was curious how you two started collaborating and working together. How did your paths converge?
It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey getting to know Matthew. But we were introduced by Matthew's dear friend, Arya, and my soul son, I call him. Love him dearly. He introduced us when he found out I'm doing the book. He figured Matthew is the perfect candidate for the book with his resiliency and power to empower everyone around him. And, so we decided to meet. We met in my backyard. We sat outside on a beautiful sunny day and spoke pretty much for about 4 hours together. And then I started writing. And then Matthew came back for another 2 hours and we edited together his entire story. And then I submitted it to the Braid with Matthew's blessing, and it got picked for originally Persian Sunrise American Sunset, and then a second time for Out Loud. And so when it was picked for the Persian Sunrise American Sunset, they told us, please sit together again and really go deep into that moment. So me and Matthew sat together again for another couple of hours, and we went into that day of his mom's passing. And when we were done, there was a dragonfly. And I saw Matthew's face in shock. And I turned and I said, Matthew, are you okay? And he said, oh my God. You know, the day my mom passed, there was a dragonfly on the threshold of my apartment. And it sort of hung there for a couple of days. And his mom is actually born on the year of the dragon. So, yeah. And this dragonfly just stood there and looked at, like looking onto us and giving us her blessing. That you guys are doing something great, and I really feel we are doing something wonderful to enrich our community, other communities, and I'm sure Matthew will add on to that.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the crux of it. I mean, that's exactly how it went. We met initially because Dorit is writing, producing, and editing a wonderful book which features different people's stories. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dorit, it's for every day of the year.
Yes.
360 stories.
And well, we're going to see if it goes to 365. It may not.
Well, a nice collection of people's stories, yes, to inspire. And I was honored enough to be asked to come in and speak to her about my life story so that she could write a piece about me as one of the entries. And as she said, we spoke for about 4 hours. It was during COVID, so we were outside in the backyard with her beautiful backyard. And that's how we initially met and how we got to know each other. And then she reached out and said, do you want to do something for the Braid? They're taking submissions. So that's when we kind of told my story.
How did you two parse down 4, 5, 6 hours of conversations into one story?
Oh, it was so hard. It was so hard. It was because honestly, when Matthew speaks, it's all gems coming out. And it's so hard to pick and choose. But, you know, together we sat and did it. And it was just such an enriching, growing experience to be with Matthew.
Thank you, Dorijun. It felt very much the same for me. It was a very cathartic experience because it's not something I revisit that often. And if I do, it's maybe over the years in a therapist's office or just in my own head. So to be able to get it out of me in such a way was really rewarding. So I'm eternally grateful to Dorit for that and for creating the space to do that. And also to see it acted out in a theatrical presentation and seeing, you know, words and emotions, phrases, feelings, all that came from out of my feelings, right? And to see it acted in front of me, it was like it's surreal and it's cathartic at the same time. And it's like a release in a way that it's painful at times and it's wonderful at times, but overall it's just a fantastic experience. So I'm eternally grateful to Dorit for coming into my life and for presenting me with this opportunity.
Oh, that's so beautiful. What a gorgeous connection you two forged.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, in your conversations, especially around your mother's death, Matthew, your connection via Judaism, was that a big part of your discussions?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dorit. I don't think it came up so much as a central theme. I think the way it came up in terms of my relationship with my mother and my experience with her and her having ALS and passing away, et cetera, I think the role that Judaism played in that was that it's an innate part of who I am, and it's an innate part of the culture that I come from, meaning being Jewish and Iranian, even though we weren't particularly religious, we were very secular. That's how it came into play for me personally in the story. So it wasn't like explicitly talked about within the story. I think there was, I don't remember if it made it into the final cut, but there was definitely, it did, right, Dorit? Where my mom's cousin who's religious came and
yes. Went,
yeah, that whole thing. And I guess in a sense, that whole thing kind of shows the juxtaposition of a religious Jew and a secular Jew. I mean, the time came when the doctors told me, you know, we have to essentially pull the plug at this point. And he came running up to me saying, this is a sin. You can't do this. This goes against the Torah. And it put me in this position where I had to it was like a face off between my humanity and my religiosity, which I'm not religious, so there wasn't much of a fight to put up there. But I just remember looking at him and saying, well, it might not be okay in terms of the religion, but this is inhumane. I can't keep her on a, you know, life support machine for God knows how many years. But other than that, no, it didn't really come up. Again, it was just sort of like an underlying thing of which sets up who I am, where I come from, who my mother is, where she comes from.
Yeah.
If I may add, I think what came up with the Jewishness was all the shoulds that our community lays on us and imposes on us. And we take it on and we say, this is the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And I think Matthew is such a beautiful example of letting all these shoulds, just all these walls just dissipate and that we are all human, just like what you just said. It is not humane to do that. And we are all human. And we are all feeling all these feelings.
Thank you for that, Dorit. That's a very good point. And I feel like that's a theme throughout my entire life, not just this, you know, this part chapter of my life, like all of the shoulds, what should you do, which are imposed on us, again, from our culture of being Jewish, from our culture of being Iranian. I mean, there's a lot of standards that are set for us in our lives, and I go against just about every single one of them, I think. So thank you for bringing that up, Dorit.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that, by the way. I think all the shoulds are there to be stood up against. So I'm very proud of that.
I think a lot of people would agree with you, especially in the more progressive Jewish communities that are standing up against all the rules, the shoulds, the questioning what has been written millennia ago, and thinking about how it applies in the context of our world and our lives today.
If I may, I always say that, you know, there are many options you can take from Torah and from Jewish study, and one of them should always be, it might not be correct.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm sorry, I know that there are people that that's sacrilegious to say to, but maybe the Torah just got it wrong sometimes, you know? And also, let's be real. When the Torah was written and when it was passed down millennia ago, they didn't have life support machines. They didn't have all of the advances, the medical advances that we have right now. And I know that a central theme of Judaism is life above all, like saving life above all. But at what point do you stop and say, well, the body is alive, but the brain isn't? And what part of, you know what I mean? Like what part of that is considered life? So we could, that could be a whole podcast in itself. So we won't
And also to add to what Matthew is saying, as part of Judaism, we are encouraged to ask questions and to ask why. Why are all these rules here? Why do they still apply? Do we still need to go by these rules? Or can we tweak them, break them, and make new rules? And then those are meant to be, you know, at some point, either thrown out, broken, or revised. So I think continuously, as Jewish people, I think one of the nice traits that we have is that we ask questions and to continuously ask ourselves, is this serving me? Is this serving people who we love around us and who we care about? And I think that's where Matthew was at. He had no doubt, and there was no question that I'm doing this. This is my decision. I've been given power of attorney for this exact reason that I am going to do this. And he did it. And that takes so much courage.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, there was doubt, especially when the cousin came running back to me. The fear of God in me, but...
But you went past it.
I got past, I mean, listen, the doctor was the person who I was listening to, and I asked a lot. You know, it was a very difficult decision to come to at you know, 27, 28 years old. That was a lot of responsibility. So after going through all of that discussion with the doctor and with my uncle and different family members, then to say, okay, this is the right thing to do, to have somebody then run up to you and be like, this goes against God, you're sinning. It's like, whoa. And I think I just didn't have the capacity at that point. I'm like, no, I'm not. So I guess you're right in that sense. So the decision was made and we were sticking to it. And to also just, Danielle, I'm sorry, I feel like we've fully taken over this podcast at this point.
No, this is fantastic. You're making my job very easy. Keep going.
This is it. It's always easy with Matthew. It's just easy to speak.
Thank you. But to piggyback off of what Dorit is saying, is I firmly believe, and also within Sephardic religious culture of the past, there's always been a tradition of evolution and of moving forward with times. Rabbi Uziel is a perfect example of that, who is the chief rabbi of Palestine into Israel statehood up until, I believe, 1952, who made so many tweaks and adjustments to what were these supposed rules that were supposedly set in stone. And he wasn't the only one. There's a long line of Mizrahi and Sephardic rabbis who thoroughly believed in moving forward with the times, in For example, with Rabbi Uziel, when abortion was an issue, he ruled, no, abortion should be legal. And this is not some reform, quote unquote, right. Like, you know, rabbi. This was a Orthodox. I wouldn't even use the term Orthodox. He was a Mizrahi / Sephardic rabbi in Israel, chief rabbi. And that there's even a tradition of that within Iranian rabbis, I just found out, which was the head rabbi of Iran prior to the revolution. And at the revolution was Rabbi Shofet. And he also made a lot of these sort of exceptions. And Judaism was always about that. I mean, none of these laws were, I mean, even the law that you are Jewish if your mother is Jewish, that wasn't always the case. Yeah. That at one point that changed. It used to be patrilineal, yeah. Right? So I just wanted to put that out there.
I know you said that your story isn't Jewish or about very many Jewish things, but based on the past 10 minutes, I feel like you brought up a lot of Jewish questions and Jewish discussion. It's a whole Devar Torah in itself, right?
Well, we have to thank for that.
I am curious, outside of this particular creation, the dragonfly, you both do a lot of work in digital activism and writing. Dorit, you have your work in progress book, Empower Me Today. And Matthew, you write about the war in Iran and the Jewish connection to this war, as well as your own experiences as the Empress Mizrahi in Israel. So I'm curious, what are your personal relationships to Jewish identity today with all of these projects and explorations in mind?
I spent a good deal of my life in my younger years sort of trying to disconnect from my Jewish identity and my Iranian identity, because I saw them as sort of the root of all of the homophobia that I faced, mm-hmm. and the, you know, all of that sort of thing, that traditionalism. And I came to a place a few years ago where I realized, you know, you can't run away from who you are, just like you can't run away from being queer. You can't, yeah. run away from being Iranian. And you certainly cannot run away from being Jewish. So while I'm not, you can't, I'm of the belief, and I don't.
Or someone will run at you at your mother's deathbed. That's what will happen.
And they always do. Yeah. They always do. It comes, you know, who you are is who you are, and you can never run away from who you are. And that's a valuable lesson to me when I speak to young people and teens at speaking engagements in high schools and so on. I that's one of my phrases that I always try to hammer home. You can never run away from who you are. So don't waste your time trying like I did, you know? I feel very much connected to my Jewishness in terms of Jewish ethnicity, Jewish culture, Jewish heritage. I'm not a particularly religious or spiritual person when it comes to Judaism. I'm much more, I find the history and the sort of ethnic component of it much more riveting and much more interesting. And I'm continuously watching documentaries and reading and delving into that. That's not to say that I don't have an appreciation for the religious element of it, because if it wasn't for the religious element of Judaism, we would have lost our identities. All of us would have lost our identities 2,000 years ago when we were, you know, expelled from our homeland. So that's where I'm at with Judaism. There's an innate connection to it. There's an innate rebelliousness that I have towards it as well. It's all there, but I will never again will I ever try to deny that part of myself.
Thank you for sharing that, Matthew.
Of course.
Dorit, did you want to share too?
Yes, of course. As far as connecting and rebelling, I'm going to also go into that. Connecting to my Jewishness, it's interesting. When I was sort of just sitting with this question, you know, I feel like there's a Jewish angel actually following me around as I'm like running away from it. So if, you know, the first 10 people I interviewed for the book were Jewish, then I went to other religion, faith and nationalities and other people of color and race. And then the braid came up again. Another Jewish platform. And then my first podcast on the Bima, another Jewish platform. The first inspirational speaking I did was at a temple. And these were all like, these are all happening, and it's a start point, I feel, for me, that it starts sort of with a Jewish angel or a Jewish hand that is holding me. So, yes, I was born into a Jewish family. I definitely have a lot of the personalities of a Jewish mother, but I think I'm a lot more than that. I think when I think of myself, I think that I connect to every religion, every nationality. I'm open to, curious to find out and connect. And I feel like we're all one. We're all connected. Mm-hmm. We are all living in this one connective circle, in this bubble of love, as I call it. And if we cast and we say, okay, us Jewish people here and you guys are over there, that I'm not for. That's not. And I'm open. I'm open to everyone who comes my way. I think they're all God sent. They're coming to give me a message for me in my life and for me to grow. And there's a reason they were sent and they are in my life, as I hope to be a vessel for other people. And I just wanted to also add that my first connection, real connection to Judaism and to understanding a little bit more of the spiritual side of Judaism was through Kabbalah. Mm. And sitting in Kabbalah class and listening and taking that side of Judaism in. And I think that was a doorway into my own spirituality. And thereafter, looking into other religion bases, spirituality as well.
Wow. That's so beautiful. It's really wonderful to hear about both of your journeys and perspectives and this idea of a connection and a rebellion at the same time. So I wanted to ask you, thinking about these ideas of connecting and rebelling and where Jewishness comes up in unexpected spaces and how it's connected to everything and everyone around us and ourselves, what are some Jewish stories do you think need to be told right now?
Dorit, take it away. You say Jewish stories, are you referring to like religious Jewish stories?
Whatever, or just that means to you. Stories? I mean, there's 1 million different kinds of ways to be a Jew. There's different perspectives of different Jewish artists, makers, leaders, etc.
Yeah.
What are the stories that need to be told?
I think that the most important stories that need to be told are stories of people going through trauma and loss and depression, and also all, again, going back to where we started, the shoulds that people have overcome, and how were they, you know, again, felt accepted or not accepted, and then went into other communities and felt that they belong there if they don't belong here. And I think those stories are so important, because it is through those stories that we are empowered and we learn and we move through our difficult times together. Mm.
Well said. Well said. Matthew, did you want to add on?
Sure. I'm not add on. That's beautiful, and that's not where I would go. Where I'm going with this, why for me the stories that need to be told right now, I'm very, very passionate about telling the stories of Jews from Iran, mm-hmm. and the history of Jews from Iran that so few people seem to know about, which leads to the bigger story that needs to be told, which is the story of Jews as a Middle Eastern people, mm-hmm. that the Jews who are Middle Eastern, who have been somewhat othered in the Western world, particularly in Europe and in the US, where things are very Ashkenormative, mm-hmm. are Jews who actually never left the region. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's really important to tell those stories, tell the story of Jewish history, of where we come from as a whole people. Yes, we are one people, but where did we come from? And, you know, somebody just shared some quotes with me that I'd actually never heard before from people like Golda Meir and a couple of other major players in early Zionism that were inherently anti-Mizrahi statements. And I was infuriated, and there was this whole discussion happening about it. And I just put up my hand and I said, you know, this discussion is great, but I want everybody who's in this room right now to understand that those were Jews who lost their way because they have forgotten who they were and where Judaism came from, where Jewish people came from, where the religion came from, where all elements of Judaism came from the Middle East. It is a Middle Eastern culture. Just because we've been exiled and sent to different parts of the world and have been in Europe for so many hundreds of years does not make it any less so. So I feel like those are very important stories that need to be told in terms of Judaism. And then sort of a little bit related to that as well, just the story of as a queer person, that the story of people that don't fit into like this neat sort of mold of what a Jew is supposed to be or what a Jew is expected to be. I feel like the more those stories are told, the more people feel empowered to lean into their own Jewishness instead of run away from it.
Yeah.
And also, if I may add, it's the first day of Purim and the story of Queen Esther.
Yeah.
How befitting that you just said that, Matthew, that it comes from this Persian kingdom and this our country. It starts there. And so, yeah, going back to our ancestors and her courage and her empowered feminine wise being of, you know, and showing courage to save people. So, yeah, absolutely comes from Iran.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, you know? And Persian women are right now talked about more than ever, I feel. No, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, the women of Iran are leading a revolution.
Yes.
It's the first ever woman-led revolution. And I just posted about this yesterday that the spirit of Queen Esther and even the spirit of Vashti is very much, you know, within these Iranian women who are fighting right now for their right, for bodily autonomy, to be able to wear what they want or not wear what they want, or just for freedom. I mean, this is 100% the spirit of Queen Esther. And I know Queen Vashti gets a bad rap because she's anti-Semitic. She'd enslave Jewish people. But at the end of the day, let's not forget Queen Vashti was banished because she refused to wear or not wear what the king demanded of her, right? So I feel like that these are stories that are so relevant today, especially today. And I really wish, and, you know, without getting into too much detail, I think a lot of Jewish Iranians are kind of like sitting sort of not getting as involved in this movement. So that's why I take it upon myself to be so vocal about it. There's a whole host of reasons why, which we don't need to get into. But I do, you know, it's important for me to remind people that Jewish people have been in Iran for, the Purim story takes place in the year of, you know, 400 BCE. Mm-hmm. Jewish people were first enslaved and taken to Persia by the Assyrians in, I believe, 700 or 800 BCE. So this is an extensive culture, and we're very much a part of Persian culture and heritage. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to know that, be it good or bad, we were there. So, yeah.
Yeah. And to connect it even closer to today, the development of Purim spiels, was very much associated with queer identity. Drag was highly encouraged in Purim spiels all across where it was performed. And the more the Haskalah rebelled against it, the more there was created to say, no, here's how we're going to celebrate. Here's how we're going to perform. We're going to keep amping this up. So I think
What a great way to allow a patriarchal society to, like, for the men, to allow the men to have that outlet. It's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Because whether we like it or not, we all comprise of a degree of femininity and a degree of masculinity. So I think it's a great outlet. I think it's wonderful. Yeah. But I refuse to, I'm not getting in drag for Purim because for me, it's not a one-time right. thing or just a, you know, let me have this one outlet. It's not kitsch for me. It's not, you know, it's not something that I'm just doing because I have no other opportunity. I lived that when I was a teenager. Oh, it's Halloween. I have a chance to express my femininity. I refuse to do that at this point in my life. If I want to express my femininity on a Tuesday night, I will.
Yeah. I mean, this is getting slightly off topic and I'll return us back to where we were before, but I think there's so much undocumented simply because people didn't have the ability to speak about their queer identities for the majority of history and time. But for many, Purim Spiels were the one time of year that they could express their queer identity. If they were gender nonconforming, if they were trans, if they wanted to be in drag at all times. And then that led to the development of different kinds of like Jewish theater and like vaudeville style performance. And of course there's that entire history, but yeah, there's a lot of connections here to rebellion, to pursuing what you think is right versus what is written or what has been told that has been right to you. So thank you both. Thank you both for exploring these subjects with me today and for sharing your own stories and perspectives. I think it's so powerful and I can't wait for everyone to give this podcast a listen.
Thank you so much for having us. This is really wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to On the Bima. A special thanks to Danny Debner, our technical producer, Ilya Levinson and Alex Kaufman, the composers of our theme music, and the entire Alliance for Jewish Theater community. This podcast is brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater. If you like what you've heard today, support this podcast and all of our initiatives towards connecting Jewish theater makers by making a tax-deductible donation to Alliance for Jewish Theater at alljewishtheater.org or joining as a member. Make sure to give us a review on iTunes and learn more about us at alljewishtheater.org. I'm your host, Danielle Levski, and I'll chat with you next time on The Bima. Chaim.